Welcome to Free Thinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston, the Conscious Resistance Network. We're here for another week of uncensored news, underground music. My name is Derek Bros, here with Micah. What's going on, man?
What's going on? Good to be here. Always happy to be on KPFT. Enjoying another week of life, you know, trying not to let all this craziness get in the way, but they've got a lot of craziness we're going to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely have some craziness going on. We're going to talk international news today, big things. Mike is going to get into some stuff on inflation and banking, important financial information. We're also going to talk some immunity passports. We got more news from last week, where that's like an ongoing conversation we're having every week now, it seems. And I also have some local news that we're going to cover, but I do want to let everybody know before we get started that you
and
can
we
find
got music. Music.
We do have music. We are going to play music. Oh, wait, one more thing. I'll get that in just a second. I want to remind everybody, though, who hasn't listened to Freethinker Radio before, that you can find us on thehoustonfreethinkers.com. It's just our history. Micah, this will be 10 years this summer since we started this show, which is crazy.
Wow.
And
wow.
That's crazy. Yeah. So if you want to find out more about our history and kind of where we come from, see some archives, go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And of course, this show broadcasts on 90.1 KPFT in Houston every Friday at 3 p.m. You can find KPFT on the web at kpft.org. And on that note, Micah, we need to mention that for anybody who's interested, whether you live in Houston or listening from wherever, that KPFT is actually having a logo design contest right now, and they say they have 12 entries so far, but they're looking for more. I can't remember the exact deadline, but let's say you have a few more days or so. So if you're feeling creative and you hear this and you want to design the new logo for a radio station in Houston, the only commercial free community ran corporate free radio station in Houston, and maybe in, you know, anywhere in Texas, you can go to kpft.org, check out the old logo, and see what kind of spin you want to put on that.
Well, we know it's the best, even if there are other ones in Texas. But what they I'd say is also, if you love KPFT and you're a graphic designer and you know about, you know, designs that pop, well, you know, don't you want KPFT to have such a design in their logo so that more and more people can be aware of what's going on here, get, you know, and empower the community? I love what we have going on here. And I love it when we get motivated first-time donors. I'm hoping we can get some of those today on the show, you know, to support KPFT in the name of Freethinker Radio. We've had a lot of supporters come through, and it's you know, the money goes to support the station, keep it on the air, keep it broadcasting, supports all the shows on the station. But also it feels like a support. I don't know about you, Derek, but it feels like direct support for us, even though we don't get any of that money. It feels like support for the work we're doing. Like people
keeps us on air.
Yeah. Like they believe in getting the ideas out. They believe in the music. They believe in what we're doing. So I want to thank everybody who does that. And if you're starting to feel like maybe you should, please just go with that. Even if you just do a little bit, it goes a long way, just the action of it. So thanks to all who do. And I appreciate you mentioning the logo design. I totally forgot about that, but I'd seen that out there. And I think that's a great way of rejuvenating the look and also getting people involved, you know, in a creative way, you know, designing a logo. What could be more creative? So I know we got absolutely a lot of local to get into. I mean, it's looking.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody who wants to support, one more time, I'll say it. The website is kpft.org. And then one last note, if you want to find us, you can always listen to our archives on the KPFT website, or you can look up Freethinker Radio on Spotify. And yeah, Micah, let's start with a couple. We got just a couple of quick notes locally. One that's like not a groundbreaking story, but also not cool to hear about. And then we're going to get into some deeper COVID news that I've been kind of doing this reporting the last few weeks, even though I'm not in Houston, doing some reporting and following the press conferences in Houston and seeing Houstonians asking lots of questions about the COVID vaccine. So we're going to get into that in just a moment. But I know you saw this first one, Micah, this whole cop threatens to kill somebody on the road. Harris County Sheriff's deputy, I believe it was, Harris County police officer caught on video pulling gun, threatening to kill driver. This happened just the other day here in Houston, in the middle of the freeway. And basically it seems this man, George Dickerson, who's also a local DJ in the Houston area, and his coworker were driving down down 59 South, and there was a funeral procession with some cops, and he tried to go around it. I don't think he did so in any kind of like cutting off the cops, but one of the cops slammed on the brakes. He had to slam on his brakes. A big mix up. Next thing he knows, this cop runs out, you know, parks in front of him, jumps out with his gun pulled in the middle of the freeway. And there's a Facebook video I actually found on his Facebook account. And you can hear the cop saying, like, you know, I will effing kill you. And just comes out like with the gun pointing at the dude. And so the Harris County Sheriff's Office has now said that the deputy has been placed on administrative leave and that anyone with information can contact the Internal Affairs Division. They claim that they're going to do an investigation into this. But yeah,
just definitely
another day.
I appreciate you covering this one because I think there's some aspects to it that might be, you know, overlooked here, because I see in the video, you know, I've seen the video, I've watched the video. At the same time, we have to take it on the gentleman's word. And I guess you could look at the police records that day that there was an officer in front of him that stopped like that. And given that there was an officer, if there was an officer in front of him that stopped like that, I assume there is. So let's go with that. Then this is an example, again, of, you know, one rule for them and one for everyone else. Would he jump out and do that to an officer? Because the officer, it sounds like, got brake checked by an officer in front of him. Is that correct, Derek?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
So he got brake checked. He had to stop. And the officer behind him, in his domino effect, gets out and pulls a gun on the middleman. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not a good situation. And I mean, with everything going on in the world, I think if anybody, I put the question, you know, out to anybody listening, what would you do if a cop pulled a gun on you in the street? You know, just thinking about that, and you're this man. And I watched the video, and it's a pretty short clip, like, but still, the dude looked, he's not a short guy, the guy George Dickerson. You know, he's a big enough dude where he doesn't seem like he scares easy, I guess I'll say. But he's got a gun drawn on him by a cop running at him in the middle of the street, and he understands, like many of us, that if a cop did choose to shoot him because he said, "Oh, I was scared. This guy cut me off, and I thought I saw a gun," he's probably going to get away with it, you know, and he'll probably be dead. So, you know, and I will say George Dickerson was a white man. I don't know if anybody thinks that plays in the situation. The cop that pulled the gun looked Hispanic. I don't know if those things factor in. I know for some people they do, but for me, it just looks like some arrogant dude who got offended and pulled a gun way too quick.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is part of some of the things that we kind of try to talk about on the aside here. You know, all this hustle, bustle, stress, these things that we talk about, like, as far as news events in this show, and the effect they have on people's psyche. You know, the officer, the driver, the officer in front, you know, all these people. I mean, I imagine that the officer on the motorcycle is probably, and the motorcycle cop probably a little bit, you know, almost been off the road by cars a few times. Anybody who's ridden a bike in this type of traffic has learned to fear for their lives from cars and stuff. So, but at the same time, it doesn't merit this emotional reaction that it seems like, because, you know, he could go up there and maybe talk to him, but coming out threatening to kill the man, you know, over stopping, maybe he was following too close, or, you know what I'm saying? I really don't know. I mean, if you're so close that it sets you off that passionately, maybe you're not observing safe following distance. I don't know. There's a lot to even simple little things like this, and they're going off not just all around Houston different times, but at the same time all around the country, and everybody's all stressed out. We got COVID, all this stuff. So I think we really got to think about how we are communicating with one another and how we're doing things. And I know oftentimes people's passions are high and they don't, and they jump out like this officer did, it seems like.
Yeah. And we both know from the past about having guns pulled on us by HPD, by Houston Police Department, but we'll have to wait and see how that one develops. I want to move on now to another local story before we get into the local COVID news. This one is part of the conversation we've been having for months now, Micah, about food security in Houston and in Texas and generally in the United States, and I guess all around the world in some places that are very dependent on farms and food coming from elsewhere. This winter storm that we covered last week and talked about, of course, that devastated parts of Houston and various parts of Texas. Well, it hit the urban farms in Houston, some of which that we've worked with or helped support in the past via this show and KPFT. These urban farms were hit hard by the not only the power outages, but the cold, of course, and the freeze. And it says here that this one of these farmers from Plant It Forward, and we've worked with Plant It Forward doing a garden crawl, bike crawl a couple years ago. They lost 80% of their crop in Southwest Houston. And it says in Needville, these other farmers of Three Sister Farm lost nearly 100% of their crop, and a number of plants had to be moved from a greenhouse after the power died. And where the farmer says, with the extended forecast of below 20 degrees, we knew there was nothing we could do to save it. We didn't even cover anything. Then it says Plant It Forward president, Plant It Forward, of course, is a number of different farms in the Houston area, and they help refugees, and they do a lot of good work. They have a few farms around the Houston area. They said that the damage is worse than Hurricane Harvey in 2017. So, and then finally, Fincas Tres Robles and Second Ward, which is near the old, where the last organic outpost used to be. Thomas, who runs that farm, said that, you know, they've suffered the loss of their entire crop. And basically, he was kind of talking about how since their farm is a smaller urban farm, they don't qualify for various grants or money from the USDA or from the federal government because, you know, I guess they're not considered an agriculture operation. But just some awareness that, again, like this is just another way that we, because we've talked before last week about how because of power outages, people were having to dump out milk and like certain food was getting tossed away in the garbage. And then there was one incident where people were trying to go dumpster dive to get the food that was being thrown away by the groceries because they couldn't legally sell it. And then the cops were protecting the garbage dumps from people getting food. And then we're hearing, you know, that with the increased amount of people using food banks across Texas because of COVID lockdowns, et cetera, and now things like this, that there are expected food shortages for some of the food banks in the coming months. And I don't know if that situation has changed, but that was a major report that came out in the last 2 months. And then we see things like this. There are even the small local farms being affected. So you're there, Micah. I'm not, but I thought that's definitely, you know, especially because we've done work with local community farms all around Houston. And we know that, yeah, that could be devastating to a small farm.
Two out of the three you named we'd work with. And I knew the third one because it's right out by some property. Yeah. And you remember the stats we read on the grapefruit crop and the crops down in the valley. And, you know, that's anyway, that's a little bit warmer than here. But at the same time, yeah. I also think as we get further in the show, we're going to get to inflation. And I think that that's something we may see is we may see price inflation in consumables like food, which aren't factored into the inflation numbers. I just wanted to throw that in there because I think it's relevant and a tie into something we'll get into later in the show. But I know we got more more directions to go than this, Derek. So
what, yeah, for sure. I want to get into the COVID, local COVID news now. I mean, I did want to just touch on that. Like, I think that wherever you're in Houston or not, I'm sure there's other stories like those ones I just read in Houston where, you know, weather and other kind of forces interrupt a crop, and that's something to be prepared for. I know more and more people are concerned about getting like things like heirloom seeds and non-GMO crops and how do they preserve. And so there's just, it's just a good time, like we were saying last week, that it's a good time to use these incidents as an opportunity to become more prepared in different ways. So yeah, let's continue that.
We can also expand our knowledge. Like, you know, if you live on the east side of town, there's a lot of fruit trees, right? We can see what survives. You know, here I have a number of trees that I'm concerned about, but I'm pretty sure like the loquat trees survived and things like that. So I think you're right. We need to start preparing. There's going to be lots of things that such positive choices in our lives can, you know, influence. But at the same time, there's ways we can just simply learn, even if we don't have a lot of land that we can plant on yet. And if we're container gardening in an apartment or something like that. So Anyway, absolutely.
So many ways to take care of yourself. You're listening right now to Freethinker Radio. We broadcast every Friday afternoon on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. Now, of course, the local news in Houston, I'm not going to name any other specific outlets, but I'll just generally say local news, TV broadcast, other radio stations, things like that, I believe have been doing a great disservice to the people of Houston, to a particular segment of the population overall. And if the recent polls are, you know, true, then a large part of the country, and I'm speaking about those who have questions, concerns about vaccines, sometimes called anti-vaxxers, non-vaxxers, whatever you want to call them. The point is that polls are showing that in some cases, as high as 50 to 60% of the country saying they don't plan to get the COVID vaccine or they have concerns about it, right? So whether you agree or disagree with that position, clearly this is a part of the population that probably should be listened to, probably should, you know, get to understand where they're coming from and what their concerns are about. So I've unfortunately haven't seen any other local outlets, Micah, talking about this in any kind of way that gives voice to it other than to derisively call people anti-vaxxers or just, you know, how are we going to convince them and these kinds of things. And as we're going to get into in a bit, things like immunity passports are rolling out and people are having to make real life decisions. Do I want to be able to travel anymore? Will I probably going to have to get this vaccine? I don't want. Or is this legal? People thinking about lawsuits. There's a lot of conversations happening. And the last 3 weekends, I was able to ask the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, about concerns about the COVID vaccines. And the next three stories are kind of all one over the last 3 weekends. You can find them at theconsciousresistance.com. And I went to press conference on February 6th, and I asked Mayor Turner about what they have, you know, what opportunities they have for Houstonians who experience adverse reactions from the vaccines, because they are doing these big press conferences talking about how there's vaccine hesitancy and they need to address it, and we need to make sure that Black and brown communities aren't getting left behind, and that, you know, we need to go, they're going into the kind of lower income communities around Houston to promote the vaccine specifically, because they say that it's, you know, there's inequities in the distribution and things like that. So at this press conference, I was able to ask the mayor directly if there is an opportunity for Houstonians. And just so you know, if you are, or somebody you know, are injured or have an adverse reaction from the COVID vaccine, which some people have already started to report that they have through the federal VAERS system, that's V-A-E-R-S system, that people can report adverse reactions to the CDC. I asked the mayor, is there something on the local level? And he said that, I don't have the clip pulled up, but he said, you can call the mayor's office directly, or you can email them, you can call them. So I recommend you do that, do the same thing. They said, call the health department, call the mayor's office to report those types of things. And then we need to find out if that is the case, if they're going to keep a record of that, if there's going to be a database, you know, some sort of local, on the local level, not just the federal level. Because what they told me was, well, we have access to the federal database. And so I got to ask that. And then, you know, for another day, I was also able to continue my conversation with Dr. David Peirce, Houston Health Authority, about the problems with the PCR test. And we need to talk about that in another episode. But then last weekend, a different Houstonian, not myself, because I'm here in Mexico now, a different Houstonian was able to go and question the mayor about same kind of similar things, but they asked him about the contents of the COVID vaccine and the fact that the COVID vaccines have not been tested for potentially causing cancer or infertility and things like this. And there's a few other things they have been tested for. And this Houstonian, I thought, did a great job of asking the mayor at this press conference. And unfortunately, you know, the mayor's people do not like to be questioned, as you know, Micah. And this person, they were, I'll say it, threatened to be arrested if they didn't leave the premises once they got their question out. They were, you know, the mayor's office, the only ones, the quote unquote media, to get in there. Even though I, you know, we're on KPFT, Micah, when I go out there to ask questions, they still try to tell me, well, you're not journalists, you're not qualified. But they typically let me stay. But now you have regular Houstonians going up there and they don't seem to like that. And then just the other day, just on Monday of this week, this time Judge Lena Hidalgo hosting a press conference at NRG Center, where they're announcing that FEMA is in town with the military and that they're opening this mass vaccination site at the NRG Center in Houston. And another Houstonian asked about if there have been any reported deaths from the vaccine in Houston, if they're keeping record. And she said, you know, she didn't really say, she said she doesn't know, but the vaccine's safe and everybody says it's safe. And that, you know, that's basically what the mayor said. Well, Dr. Peter Hotez said it's safe and Dr. Fauci said it's safe. I feel fine. I had it. And just kind of
got electrolytes.
Say that again.
It's got electrolytes.
Oh, it's got electrolytes. Yeah. Well, you know, it's just kind of like my point here. And what I, you know, the reason I wanted to cover this is just for one to highlight that those who don't know that like there are Houstonians out there asking these questions, and I like shout out to them. I think it's really awesome that people are doing this. I think ultimately, if you have these concerns, people need to be asking their local officials wherever you're at these types of questions and trying to hold them accountable and asking them. You know, I did ask Dr. Peirce, Houston Health Department, Houston Health Authority, if they had plans to try to push mandatory vaccinations, because he was saying that they think they're going to need 80% of the population to get herd immunity in Houston. So they're saying 80% of the population, but there's some polls saying as many as 40% of people or more don't want them. And that includes people in the military as well as nurses, you know, high number of nurses and such who have been turning it down. So the point is that, again, this is not just a your weird uncle that you want to dismiss or whatever, the way the media is trying to portray it, I think, like this is just the fringe or whatever. But the numbers show that there's a lot of people who have real concerns, and those might be some more less fact-based concerns, you know, kind of on the far end, and they might be other more just basic general concerns. Either way, the point is people have concerns and people are not sure they want this vaccine. And this part of the population is basically being ignored, or in the mayor's holding press conferences about how to convince people and, you know, end anti-vaccine hesitancy. But then there's no real conversation about, well, why are these people hesitant? You know, so.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting that they're having a conversation about ending vaccine hesitancy, but not willing to address concerns about vaccine hesitancies. So that's a bit much. And I know, obviously, we talked about electrolytes jokingly, but before we roll on, do you know much about the vaccine itself? Derek. I know you've dug into it a bit more, and I've heard a little bit about it being distinct from, you know, previous vaccines and its structure and the way it's set up, not just being a simple, sample of the sickness, but being something much more than the simple sample of the sickness that they give you that then your body builds up antibodies to and you get over. Do you know anything about that? Or
Yeah, I do know a little bit. And as far as like what's going on in Houston, it is an mRNA vaccine. So these are the first mRNA vaccines that have been approved for human use. They've, you know, the technology has been developing. The first time, the common refrain, of course, what I've noticed in the mainstream now, the response has been, well, no, actually, it's not totally brand new, because since the coronavirus is very similar to the SARS virus of 2003, when that came about, they started working on this technology, and then coronavirus came and they just had to update the technology to fit it for, you know, this current virus. So they're like, technically, it's not new. We've been working on it for a long time. But the point is, it's never before been approved for human use. That's one thing that we should say that is a fact. And that doesn't inherently mean it's bad or anything, but it's just a fact. And then the other thing is that these vaccines actually have not been given approval in the sense that people typically think it is. What they've been granted is an FDA emergency use authorization, which is a much less stringent kind of path to go on, not the typical like 2 years of trials and this. And obviously, you know, we're in a pandemic, as we're being told, and things are really bad, so we need to hurry up and get it done. So the justification is, well, we need to rush it forward in some way. As far as, like, they might say they've been working on the technology for a long time, but they definitely didn't do the full traditional approval process, even if you think that that's, you know, fair and whatever. So those things are true. And then also, like you said,
I'd like to interject there real quick. Maybe 2 months ago, you might remember this story, Derek. We spoke about Pfizer, and I don't know if it was Pfizer, but we spoke about a number of these big pharmaceutical companies being hit with fines, stuff like that, including, I believe, the maker of one of the big vaccines that's come out for this, for fast tracking in other countries, and bribing officials to get scarcely tested vaccines and medical things passed through. And like, they were so concerned about it that they paid, I mean, it was hundreds of millions of dollars. So you wouldn't think this sounds like, you know, we got companies that are, you know, well-versed in how to move things through government processes. Do you think there could be any influence from these people to make money to fast track this through? Or do you think it's all for the public good? Or what do you think? What's the deal here?
So, I mean, the thing is that some of the companies have said, like AstraZeneca, for example, has said like they're not going to profit off until a certain point. So they're saying they're not going to profit until the pandemic is officially over. Then I guess their contract stipulates they can make a profit. But most of them are doing this under the appearance of they're just trying to help out. But it is very much an industry, big pharma as they're known, that is driven by profit. I think that's a reality people should understand. But also, and I'm not quite ready to go to this conversation today, I'm doing some other research, but I do think that there are some other darker implications here. There's people of color and ethnic minorities, like the mayor, them, they're going into the Black communities, the brown communities, because they are trying to specifically convince the Black and brown communities to get this, because they know that they are hesitant, because indigenous people, people of color, the Black community have not always had the best interactions with the medical system, and particularly when it comes to vaccinations and things like this. They've learned better. And so they're trying to say that's in the past, you know, there's no reason to be concerned. But yeah, so, you know, you were asking about how the vaccine differs before we start to move forward here. It definitely is. I mean, there's no way to put it. This isn't hyperbole that we are witnessing a trial. This is an experiment, basically, because as with the other vaccines, the companies that are manufacturing this, let's say the ones that are in Houston, they're giving out the Moderna vaccine in Houston, which is an mRNA vaccine, along with the Pfizer BioNTech mRNA vaccine. And they're giving these out again for the first time for human use. The people are going to have to be tracked, traced, like, you know, basically visit doctors and stuff for up to 2 years as they keep track of them. What they do once you get the shot is they wait for 15 minutes. And if nothing happens in 15 minutes, they assume you're fine, right? But things like immune response conditions, neurological conditions can take months or years to show up from things like this. So I'm not saying that that's what we know is going to happen, but the point is we just don't know because these things haven't undergone longer than 6 months or so of trials. So we're literally witnessing a live experiment, first time in human on humans, and the companies manufacturing them have been indemnified against liability. They cannot be sued if somebody is injured in some way, you know. So those are just facts that, again, when we're having this conversation about, well, why are people concerned? Those are some of the reasons, and those don't sound unreasonable to me. And by just kind of throwing those people out of the conversation, you're crazy, you're anti-vaxxer, whatever, you're COVID denier, the people are just creating more division instead of trying to understand where that's coming from. And I think that, again, the local media and the mayor are doing a really poor job of trying to understand this part of the community.
Here, here, point well taken. Oh my goodness, it's such a mess, you know, and nobody wants to hear about it anymore. You know, we're all sick of it. We just want it to go away. But, you know, something that's been thrust into the public psyche for as long as this has and as deeply, it's going to have a lot of ramifications and attempts to, like we said in the beginning, grovel at the, you know, troughs of power and money. So anyway,
yep, absolutely. We're almost halfway through the show, guys. We're going to hit a couple more stories and play some music. I did get a new song sent to me that I'm excited to play. It's from The Infirmities and it's called Cell Block Earth. We're going to play that in just a few minutes. It's like, you know, punk band doing a little anti-lockdown tune. Some of you might enjoy that. So we're going to get into that in just a moment. But Micah, one just brief note that's just, you know, just a headline passing by. Did you see that Kroger said they're going to pay their people $100 if they get the vaccine?
No, I did not. That's interesting.
Yeah, man. I've seen stories about, hey, maybe you get a free bag of weed if you get the vaccine, $100, you know, this and that. It seems like they're really trying to convince people pretty hard. But the bigger story I want to talk about and get your thoughts on is this one where this Texas federal judge ruled that the CDC eviction moratorium was unconstitutional. Because I thought this was interesting. Like, look, the reality is people are suffering. People have been suffering pre-COVID, Federal Reserve, inflation, all the things we're going to cover in the second half of this show are a reality affecting people every day. And those things existed prior to COVID, but lockdowns, not being able to work, not being able to travel, things like that has affected tourism, has affected all kinds of people's wallets and their livelihoods. And because of that, some people can't pay rent. Some people are going to be evicted on the streets. And there was a CDC order that was actually, interestingly, I remember when this happened, it's like none of the conservatives even batted an eye, that the Trump administration passed back in September of last year. The CDC under Trump said that it was a crime for property owners to evict tenants who were unable to pay rent and had no options for affordable housing. So it basically put like a temporary ban on kicking people out. And again, like this might be a compassionate thing to do, but it definitely seemed like unconstitutional that like, okay, it's COVID or whatever, but does the government really have, especially the CDC, what the heck does the CDC have to do with, you know, rental and housing?
It's really, really profoundly interesting that you bring this up to me, because I've seen a recent story about a man, and you know, he was probably a little bit of a rough individual, not willing to take any mess from anybody, whatever you want to say, but he was a landlord. It seemed like he had a few small properties, an older guy, probably his most of his income came from, and he hadn't been able to get these people out. So him and his buddies, they couldn't get them out. So him and his buddies, they went and grabbed the guy and his girlfriend, put them in zip ties, dropped them off in a snowy graveyard. I mean, it's horrible, right? I mean, really, the story's horrible. Now he's being charged with kidnapping, you know, so he's probably going to go to jail. People are going to pay for that. And I just thought about it. So you got stimulus, you got landlords not being able to collect rent while stimulus is going out to all kinds of places. And you know what I mean? And nobody's asking, like, what is going on as far as the structure of, one, our economy and how we think of the generation of sustaining money, you know?
Yeah.
It's
just not a good situation all around. It's definitely not a good situation.
And think about it for a minute. You know, I can feel for both sides of this. You want to do something to help people. Okay. My thinking is you got looters on top and looters on bottom, but I feel for the looters feel for the people when they have needs, right? So how do you deal with this? I mean, you got the government passing stimulus to give, you know, airlines money, to give all this stuff money. Yet at the same time, they're not doing anything to help all these little people that probably sole source of income is a couple of rental houses.
Mm-hmm. They got billions for war, but they can't feed the poor, in the words of Tupac.
Yeah, yeah. And they place, you know, the poor renter and the poor landlord. Because even if you are a renter and you think your landlord is rich, we know well better than that, I would imagine. Right, Derek? I mean, some are, but not all of them. I mean, some are struggling to just keep everything together. And they
depend. Yeah, exactly. Some people own property and they're barely, you know, profiting off it or just barely keeping it together. And definitely, you know, so, but, and you know, it's a nuanced situation. But I do think it's interesting here in the way that this judge ruled in the situation. So again, Texas federal judge, 21-page ruling, Judge John Baker said that he sided with a group of landlords and property managers who alleged in a lawsuit that the CDC's eviction moratorium exceeded the federal government's constitutional authority. And Judge Barker, who was actually appointed by Trump, said, quote, although the COVID-19 pandemic persists, so does the Constitution. So those protections were then extended by Congress, and then Biden extended them to last through March. But now under this new ruling, it's basically saying that, like, you know, the Biden administration or the Trump administration, no government under the CDC, you know, the CDC doesn't have the authority to kind of stop evictions from happening. So unfortunately, because of this, I'll say it, was it allowed to happen? Was it made to happen? This engineered situation, which is just on top of more, you know, bad things, economic bad things and other realities. People are suffering. People were suffering prior to COVID. Now COVID makes things worse. And again, I will continue to say it. This furthers and kind of, it fattens the case for this is why we need a great reset. This is why, you know, clearly the systems are not working. They're all failing. This is why we need to reset the economic system. We need to reset. In the words of the World Economic Forum, we need a great reset of capitalism to fix things. So, yeah.
I don't think they really mean that. I don't think they really mean that. I think they mean some weird new thing.
Remember they said it in 2030, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
That's what they said.
Yeah.
That's what we have to look forward to.
Reset to tyranny, right? You know?
Exactly. And you know, that's where we're headed. If people do not push back, I'll say, all right, let's continue. Now we're going to move a little further. We started the conversation talking about the CDC and the COVID eviction moratoriums. Now we're going to move into a topic that I think is never going to go away until we make it go away. And that is the topic of immunity passports, which we've been talking about, Mike. We've been telling people about this since the idea was first even a sprinkle in some of these World Economic Forum guys' eyes, minds, probably as far back as March.
One of our comments earlier tonight was how in Israel they're having a green passport.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what we're going to get into here in just a second. Is that, like, I mean, well, two things about Israel. Israel is one of the places having the green card, green passport, basically the new immunity passport. And obviously, in a place like Israel, that makes, and to Jewish people, that makes some people feel a little odd or a little like, okay, how could that be happening? But we've got a couple other related breaking news items that just happened this week as we're, you know, bringing this show to you. For one, on Thursday, the various leaders of the European Union met together, and today was an important day where they were trying to decide how they're going to move forward with these digital vaccination certificates or immunity passports. And they basically decided, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel said that immunity passports to allow people to travel will probably be available before the summer. And this was, again, the result of this virtual European Union summit that took place on Thursday. She said, quote, everyone agreed that we need a digital vaccination certificate, adding that the EU Commission would need around 3 months to create the technical basis for such documents. But the thing is that companies and other institutions like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Gates Foundation are already, and the World Economic Forum are already funding some of these. One is known as the Common Pass at the World Economic Forum. I was looking up another one today called the IATA Pass, which is being created by this large lobbying group for all the airlines that's hoping to roll them out through their kind of side of the infrastructure. So, I mean, it's becoming a big conversation now. And as you mentioned, Micah, Israel allowing the green passports, the green cards. But then there was this other story reported today in AFP. Israel adopts law allowing names of unvaccinated people to be shared. And I'm sure let's file this under the category of, I'm sure this could never go wrong. Israel's parliament passes a law this week on Wednesday, which allows the government to share the identities of people who aren't vaccinated against coronavirus with other authorities, which is, of course, raising privacy concerns for people. And the measure passed by 30 votes for it and 13 against it. And it gives local governments, the director general of the education minister and ministry and the welfare ministry, the right to receive the names, addresses and phone numbers of unvaccinated citizens. So now it's not saying like this is going to be posted on a public bulletin in your neighborhood and people are going to, you know, like, here's the unvaccinated, at least not yet. They haven't said that yet. But even the idea that it's going to be shared with other government agencies and like, how is that going to be used and how is that going to affect you? Clearly, we know how it's going to affect you. Like, they're talking about these immunity passports, Micah, not only for travel now, but the conversation in the UK and other places has started to talk about supermarkets and concerts. This article here that I'm pulling up right now, in case anybody wants to look it up, it's on CNBC. COVID vaccine passports are being considered and health experts and rights groups are deeply concerned. This is one of the best recent mainstream reports that I've seen on the topic that doesn't, again, just dismiss the concerns of the people. It acknowledges the fact that there are people who are really freaked out, myself included, by this idea and by the idea that our world is going to be split now into between people who decide to carry these passports that will be allowed to go back to, quote, normal, and those who don't, who won't be able to travel, might not be able to work at their current place of employment, might not be able to bank, might, you know, just things could be really bad and really different. So this article goes deep into it. And again, I'm not going to read it, but I do recommend people check it out because it makes a few good notes, including, and I think I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again briefly, that when Joe Biden first came into office on his first full day, January 21st, he released his 200-page national coronavirus strategy. And it included a section talking about assess the feasibility of immunity passports in the United States. So the Biden administration is working on these as well, and Canada is already working on them. The UK, like, this is, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And again, like I mentioned earlier, the International Air Travel Association, IATA, they're already developing their own IATA travel pass. And this is not just some random lobbying group. They represent 290 airlines from around the world. So that's probably all the major airlines are going to be adopting them. The governments will be having their own way to go about it. And I don't know. I mean, for me, it feels, for me personally, Mike, I feel like it's just like we're moving into things very quickly that it seems like these are things that'll be hard to just turn around if we allow them to happen, you know, if there's not some kind of pushback. And I know some people, again, in the audience might say, hey, this sounds like a great idea. I want to get back to normal, but I want to know that you unvaccinated people aren't near me. And if that means you can't go anywhere, then I'm sorry. But I don't know. I mean, it feels like it can go, it's definitely going to go wrong.
Yeah, I can see some concerns for sure. I just don't, I don't understand the fervor for the vaccination. I mean, I understand you want to save people's lives, et cetera. But like, I guess we have never really had this like a degree of fervor on hurry up, get the jab on other things that could kill someone. Anyway. So I don't understand what all the passion is behind it. I mean, statistically, et cetera. I mean, I'm not trying to sound insensitive to anybody that's died. I think that, you know, if you got at-risk people, you're around at-risk people, you got to take precautions like a prudent person would, you know. But I don't know. It seems like it's just push it further and further. But I know we got a lot more stories to cover. It's a wonderful hour we've got planned for y'all. We're like about...
Yep.
Partway through it. Yeah.
Let's, I know that we're going to get now into the financial news. Micah's got some, we were talking earlier, of course, about on the local level, about like farms being hit by the storms and how that impacts the local economy. We've been, of course, even things like the whole immunity passports thing, the crazy thing about it is it's actually related to the desire to fix the economy. At least that's the claim, right? Because again, COVID hurting the economy. We need to save the airlines. We need to save all this tourism industry. So this is the quickest way to get it done. But before we dive into that economic stuff, I just want to share one other quick story that our buddy Johnny, who's not here today, he was planning to cover this, but he needed to take care of some family things. So we're just going to make note of it in case you haven't heard. It's been out there for a few weeks, maybe a month now or so. And really for a couple of years, we've known that this guy, Bill Gates, is funding all kinds of crazy things. But most recently, Bill Gates is, we know that he funds, he has a company he's invested in that funds geoengineering, which is basically various efforts to try to, you know, manipulate or fight climate change, depending on how you want to look at it, manipulate the climate by fighting it, in some cases by spraying things in the air to reflect sunlight or trying to fix ocean acidification and other things like that. Well, most recently, he doesn't want sun. It's kind of like, what is it? The Simpsons, and he's Mr. Burns, and he's trying to block the sunlight. But
in that way,
Harvard has been working on this idea for a couple of years. It's called Scope X, and they're already funding and working on a project for geoengineering. And I guess recently Bill Gates has endorsed this idea now and says he thinks that it's a great idea. And it's called the Strategic Controlled Perturbation Scope. And they're basically trying to understand how stratospheric aerosols, which they said could theoretically be sprayed out of planes in the sky, how that could affect solar geoengineering. And Bill Gates is one of the people who's funding it. And of course, Bill Gates recently put out a book like how to save the world from climate change and things like that while we're mentioning him. And I think it's just so hypocritical because there was an interview with him with Anderson Cooper from 60 Minutes, just where he kind of mentioned, he actually asked him, he's like, well, aren't you really not the perfect candidate to be leading the climate change movement? You know, you have these big jets, you're flying all around the world, you're doing this. And he kind of admits, he's like, well, yeah, you're right. My climate footprint is huge. You know, I have this and all these different things. I'm flying these different places, but I have a lot of money and I spend that money to, you know, go to causes. So I offset my climate footprint or whatever. It's basically just like, I'm rich enough though to not matter. It doesn't matter. So anyways, but yeah, Johnny wanted to throw that one out there in case you didn't know, old crazy old Bill Gates out there messing with the sky again. But yeah, let's get into the banks, Micah. I'm going to pull this up. We got this ex-bank president news.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. We got these stories, and I thought we just kind of hit the headlines. This ex-bank president thing here in Texas, so it was kind of local, you know. It turns out that she was making fake loans for years, millions of dollars in fake loans, and she was 57 years old. She pled guilty, and she also tried to set a fire to cover up the fraud. I mean, I'm just saying, I just wanted to put that out there. I didn't want to go too deep into it, but it's
she set the fire the day before a scheduled review by regulators. That's not suspicious.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So maybe not only are they banksters, but maybe they're just not all that bright sometimes. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, in the end, she ended up like pleading guilty. Like, she might as well just said, I want to go to jail the rest of my life. Can I go now? You know, and not.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Wow. So I thought that one was kind of just, you know, how sometimes we just cover, well, here's what some of the people in this profession are doing. Anyway. But yeah, the one I thought was kind of most interesting currently. So there was that going on. And
I have this one pulled up. More people are saving as a result of the pandemic, Utah bank reports. Is it,
you know, and I think that's an important one we need to get into. But as far as just bank news, there's this one, the Fed system that allows banks to send money back and forth went down for several hours. And in this one, I don't know if you see it, that CNBC one.
I got it.
In this one, they talk about an operational error. That's what they call it, right? And they say it happens just as, you know, they're starting to talk about the need for the digital dollar, this sort of stuff. You know, and they talked about what it did, you know, and the outage, you know, occurred the same week as Fed Chairman Jerome Powell spoke to Capitol Hill legislators about the progress the central bank has made on the consumer. I thought about this phrase, you know, on its consumer focused payment systems. Okay, like the economy now is like, you get what I'm saying? It's focused, like the whole money in its system is thought of as consumer focused payment system, right? For efforts to develop a digital dollar. So I thought, you know, it's not as if this outage is just because of that, but it's interesting how it coincides with it. And also the outages, particularly with the ACH system, have wide-ranging impacts. The system handles direct deposits of payroll, Social Security, income tax refunds. So that's pretty serious. We haven't seen that in the 10 years of doing this. So I figured that's some bank news that we should take a moment to talk about.
I saw this yesterday, because it just happened, or the last couple of days. I remember I saw like the breaking, you know, goes out, and it, you know, of course, like when you hear the Fed system goes down, that's like a little, okay, what exactly is this going to affect? And because I did see that it affected some banks, and I don't know if it got to the point where it affected like literally just the average person being able to pull money out of their banks, or if it was more amongst the big banks, or did you see anything like that? Like, did it actually at any point, like,
I think it was too short lived to have much of a impact on individuals where so many individuals were affected by it that people are complaining about it. But you never know what these things, you know, could be a measure of, you know, if it, so anyway, or sometimes even the cause. So I thought it was important to get into, but no, I didn't see who, you know, who was most affected by it. More about how it went down for basically about 3.5 hours and what the effects could be if this was prolonged because of the different systems that were hit. Think about it. If your paycheck was delayed direct deposit for 3 hours, you might not notice it as much, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we're going to have to keep an eye on that one, because like you said earlier, I can see it being just more kind of a weather on purpose or allowed to happen. But definitely, like, this is why we need this digital system. This is why we need to, you know, again, this is why we need to reset our systems, make them more sustainable, more equitable. So, all right, let's continue. I know you got more than a few headlines. Yeah. I've got them all pulled up right now, so I'm ready to go through them.
Through this kind of inflation overview I want to give. I see everybody all of a sudden wants to talk about inflation. I know we've been talking about it on Freethinker Radio probably since day one. But it turns out that the Fed talking about it now, Governor Lael Brainard basically said that, you know, we're far from employment and inflation goals. So her argument more or less is we've got to crank it up to get to that inflation goal. So here you got Fed people more or less themselves saying, you know, until average inflation is above 2% and on track to moderately exceed 2% for, quote, some time, she said. And that's all I wanted to hit on that one. So this Fed person herself is saying, look, we're not on track. We need more inflation and it needs to exceed 2%. And anybody who doesn't know already that the actual inflation numbers are misrepresented, there's some homework to do there to see that. But so 2% is probably really more like, I don't even know what percent, depending what they're counting and what they're not. And we see they, you know, begin to manipulate that. It could be 8, 12, you know. So as food prices go up, we could be paying twice as much for food. And they still argue that the inflation was the same. Everybody could be paying twice as much for gas. And they'd still argue that the inflation was the same. So, you know, there's something to think about. So, you know, we got all kinds of articles popping up, and I don't think we need to go too far into them, but we got this one where Fed's George says inflation could firm up quickly after vaccinations. The main takeaway there for me from Market Watch was, okay, so once the vaccinations come and people start feeling confident about getting out of the house again, crawling out of the cave and seeing the sunlight, they might start wanting to buy things. And so all of a sudden you'll have pent up demand meeting scarcity, because as we're talking about with the food, there's less out there production. We've seen, you know, all these businesses closing down. So that'll drive up costs. And I'm like, come on, what about printing all that money? Ain't that going to drive up costs? Maybe all these things will. Then you got another one, the coming problem in the U.S. Seeking alpha. And there, you know, it continues to point to inflation. And so on. So, you know, just a couple of those. I wanted to point out how everybody's talking about it, a couple of the good stories. And then this last one here where big short investor Michael Burry, he's also says to prepare for inflation. And, you know, y'all, people who don't know him or may not remember, Michael Burry is the individual who basically bet, you know, during the housing crisis to make all this money, a $1 billion bet against the U.S. housing bubble. And it was chronicled in his book, The Big Short, a movie. It's a pretty interesting movie. I think you've seen it too, right, Derek?
Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah, it's a
okay,
good movie.
So even he, you know, who's able to see that, is talking about this upcoming inflation. And he's talking about, you know, maybe Bitcoin and gold won't be the safest havens that everybody thinks they'll be. They might be at risk, thinking that the inflation money is going into all kinds of other assets and leaving Bitcoin and gold, you know, traditional or at least current, I guess you could call it bastions to escape inflation, to get out of the Federal Reserve note. People have been flying, you know, into metals and various cryptos, including, you know, the iconic Bitcoin.
I think it's interesting, though, he says, though, specifically because that the governments will try to squash competitors.
I'm glad you brought that. I remember that paragraph, and I'm really glad that's one that I did think was a great takeaway from there. That's it exactly. So how would they do that, Derek? You know, they'll start manipulating the markets as they can while telling us that, you know, there's some freedom or we're all equal. How can we be equal when some people get to manipulate the markets like that from an authority point of view rather than from, you know, just them having that power because they, you know, own this or they created this or they, you know, saved their money or whatever. I don't know. I just think it's a kind of a dangerous area, you know, and yes, you're talking about the Great Reset. We've got all this going on, you know, governments asserting themselves and authoritarians and authorities asserting themselves in people's lives, in the money, in business. So, yeah, I mean, and why would they do this, you know? And it said, like you said, the reason is because it competes with them, right? Isn't that at least what Michael Burry said? And I mean, that guy's a pretty smart guy. I mean, you don't have to rely on Derek and I to say it, but Michael Burry said that they will quash what competes with them. And that's not a free market or even an open market or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. But that's about all I really wanted to get into in there. There was one other takeaway I saw where, you know, the U.S. won't be able to hide inflation as easy as it has because it won't have the exploding labor market of China to just keep making goods cheaper and cheaper so that, you know, the goods aren't going up with the labor inflation.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of big things. I mean, it's just besides all the kind of warnings we've been giving and concerns about like the COVID situation in the background with, of course, the changing Biden administration, like the new relationships that are being formed as well as basically you have like the Obama White House back in the White House again. You have a lot of the same people. So some of them are trying to establish those relationships and it's going to be interesting to see how things change between China and the US, especially because, I mean, we're doing, along with the economy, there's like another kind of arms race towards AI technology, towards, you know, these, just all these emerging new digital technologies that they're trying to use, and including like digital currencies and other things like that. They're working on the global, what are they called? Global central bank digital currencies. Like there's just a lot of big moves taking place here.
And there are times, I think, as you speak about the global central bank and stuff, and we talk about the Great Reset and such, there's times when I think there's an assertion from on high that, you know, here's the answer. We need to come together as one, you know, sort of thing. But I don't always feel like that, you know, look, the nation states are failing, you know, et cetera. I don't know. I just sometimes feel like there is a lot of assumption in people's minds that it would be better if there was, you know, one homogenous order to this stuff. But, you know, I'm not sure how close to any reality that is or anything like that. But it does seem like there's some undertones of it in various directions. If you don't think about it, what do you think just following authority and quashing anybody who competes with you is?
Yeah. Well, we're here on the last few minutes of Freethinker Radio, guys. I'm going to cover one more story, and then I think we might have time to open up the lines. We'll see if anybody wants to comment on. We've talked about inflation. We've talked about vaccinations. We talked about immunity passports. We've talked about the local food economy and lots more. And I got this last story, but we will probably open up the lines. This one, Micah, I don't know if you had a chance to check this one out. It's another one that I'm just going to give a brief overview, and I recommend everybody visit thegrayzone.com to find out more about this. If you've never heard about the Gray Zone, they do some good work in the kind of geopolitical landscape. This article published a couple of days ago.
I saw something like this on Mint Press speaking of this same topic.
Yeah, this story is starting to get out there, and Twitter's trying to censor it as usual. And I think it's, of course, it's, I don't even expect these things to pop up in the mainstream anymore, but it's titled Reuters, BBC, and Bellingcat participated in covert UK Foreign Office funded programs to, quote, weaken Russia. Leaked docs reveal new leaked documents show that Reuters and BBC's involvement in covert UK FCO programs to effect, quote, attitudinal change and, quote, weaken the Russian state's influence alongside intelligence contractors and Bellingcat. So the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office is what the FCOs has sponsored Reuters and the BBC to conduct a series of covert programs aimed at promoting regime change inside Russia and undermining its government across Eastern Europe and Central Asia. This is according to a series of leaked documents, which show that the Thomson Reuters Foundation and BBC Media Action have been participating in these covert information warfare programs aimed at Russia, which, of course, in this age of kind of Russia phobia shouldn't be surprising. But I think it's important for me because people generally think, I know that maybe not all of our audience, but a lot of people, maybe on KPFT's audience and some in the more mainstream audience, think of Reuters and BBC as kind of the, especially Reuters, as like a news service that's like completely objective and, you know, impartial and does a great job. And I think in many cases they do. But this also shows you that these types of programs, which we've first had revealed back in the 60s during the Church Committee hearings, showing that the intelligence communities in the US, and now we know in the UK as well, have been working with mainstream media to spread certain messages. And this is just a modern example of that. So not a huge surprise, but I think an important one that people who haven't heard about this information should really study. So working through a shadowy department within the Foreign and Commonwealth Office known as the Counter Disinformation and Media Development, the media organizations operated alongside a collection of intelligence contractors and a secret entity simply known as the Consortium. So through training programs of Russian journalists overseen by Reuters, the British Foreign Office sought to produce a, quote, attitudinal change in the participants, promoting a positive impact on their perception of the UK. And these revelations show, this is according to Chris Williamson, a former UK Labour member of parliament, who said, quote, these revelations show that when MPs were railing about Russia, British agents were using the BBC and Reuters to deploy precisely the same tactics that politicians and media commentators were accusing Russia of using. So, yeah, interesting. And he goes on to say the BBC and Reuters portray themselves as unimpeachable, impartial, and authoritative sources of the world news, but both are now hugely compromised by these disclosures. Double standards like this will just bring establishment politicians and corporate media hacks into further disrepute. Apparently, a Thomson Reuters Foundation spokesperson confirmed the authenticity of the leaked documents in an email response to the Gray Zone. However, she said, quote, the inference that Thomson Reuters Foundation was engaged in secret activities is inaccurate and misrepresents our work and the public interest. We have for decades openly supported a free press and have worked to help journalists globally develop the skills needed to report with independence. But the article goes on to detail what these documents actually show. Again, I recommend checking it out. We're just doing a brief kind of overview here on Freethinker Radio, but these are the kind of stories that you hear on KPFT and that you won't find other places, and that you hear on Freethinker Radio and you won't find other places. This article is coming from the Gray Zone, and as Micah said, you can find out more about it on the Gray Zone and Mint Press News. Both have been good sources for that information. And then I will add to that that when the Gray Zone journalist Max Blumenthal shared this article on his Twitter, I don't know if he was completely banned or they just deleted the tweet or something, but they did some form of kind of like, hey, this information has been leaked or hacked and you're not allowed to share it. So don't expect to hear about it on CNN.
You know what I like about KPFT?
What's that?
Well, Freethinker Radio, of course, but I like Afrotonic too. They're pretty good. I listen to them on Fridays right after Freethinker Radio.
Afrotonic is really awesome. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think we're winding down. I know we're gonna hang out a little while and all that, but it's been a great show, and I hope everybody has a good weekend. We're broadcasting, you know, Friday, 3 o'clock hours, going on 4 o'clock now, in Houston, Galveston, and Huntsville. So reaching a lot of people on the FM. Thank you, everybody who supports, all first time supporters, sharing, liking, hearting, commenting, and most of all, supporting KPFT in any financial way possible. Thanks, Derek, for always doing this for a decade now.
All right. Well, that's it for KPFT. We appreciate everybody's tuning in.
More than half of California's 40 million residents are subject to a stay-at-home order. People are banned from meeting anyone from outside their household.
This just in, breaking news. You are all now prisoners here. Yeah.
you whether you wanted to stay or not, but it seems that the caretakers have made the decision for you. We're all locked in now.